Every time I think of you, I always catch my breath, and I'm still standing here, and you're miles away, and I'm wondering why you left.
It became a number one song and international hit for John Waite back in 1984, Missing You. John had scored a couple of hits earlier as a member of the Babies back in the late 1970s, and even scored a country hit not too long ago when he recorded a duet of Missing You with Alison Krauss. He's a very talented singer and songwriter, and the subject of a brand new documentary film called John Waite the Hard Way that is directed by music documentary veteran Mike J. Nichols. And we had a chance to catch up with both John and Mike earlier today. Thank you both for being with us this morning. John, you talk about it in the film. You come from working class roots. You seem to be a pretty humble guy. Was it difficult for you to let filmmakers into your world?
Not really. I think part of being a songwriter is that you're trying to transmit an idea or have a conversation with an audience or with somebody else. It's a very open thing. And if you ask me a question, I'll try and give you an answer. You know, I think there's an art to making the answer, you know, so it's all part of the same thing, really. It's the same experience. Mike would know more about that, being a filmmaker.
Mike, by the way, we had your colleague, Andrew Slater, from Canyon, which was great. He was on with us when that wonderful film came out. The title of the movie, The Hard Way, it's got multiple meanings, because you weren't able to make this film the way you normally would, but it seems like those limitations maybe spurred a different level of creativity.
You know, Scott Wright had that title, and it was one of the things, I think it got mentioned about changing the title. It was one of those things where I was like, no, because it represents, in a meta way, it's not only like it's a struggle to get through the music business, and then the way John does it is what I would say is much more of a difficult way, a different choice than a lot of other people would do. But then us making this, choosing to do it at a time where you don't have everything on the table to make something from, there was nothing about this that became an easy way. So I just said, there's no other title than that, because it represents everything.
That's cool.
John, I learned some really cool things about you. First and foremost, the influence of Marty Robbins, or certainly that Gunfighter Ballads album cover that was an inspiration.
Huge. I mean, being a little kid, 5 years old, we only had a black and white TV, but you'd get Champion the Wonder Horse and Gunsmoke and all this stuff. And obviously, being an English kid and living on the edge of the countryside, it was cowboys and Indians all the way. You know, it was really serious, like Ghost Riders in the Sky. I mean, that's an incredible visual. I mean, Ghost Riders in the Sky, you know, this is on a 5 year old brand. And, you know, that went straight to the Beatles. Fire. Brenda Lee, Jim Reeves, The Pretty Things. And almost simultaneously, Jimi Hendrix. So a lot of it was American, and apart from the Beatles, but a lot of it was Americana. It was, I was influenced by folk music and country more than rock and roll. So there was always storytelling there. But with Marty Robbins, you know, El Paso, Big Iron, you know, this is serious stuff. This is great storytelling. And it's cinematic, you know, it's cinematic songwriting.
I always point out to people, if they don't know too, that it was Marty Robbins who was the first to use fuzz tone on a record with Don't Worry About Me.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
A happy accident there. Because of that influence, was it even more important to you to have success here in America when you did with the Babies?
Yeah. No, I mean, any kind of success when you're 20, 18, 17 is major. Playing at any kind of a gig in a pub or in a hall, so a scout hut, you know, anything just to play. But the, you know, the sword and the stone, the brass ring, was definitely America. To, you know, I mean, the home of rock and roll, the home of the blues, country, cowboys and Indians, all the imagery and all the influences all came from America. you know, I mean, it's just this. England was black and white, as they say, very cold. There was no money. Everybody's kind of getting by. And you look across the ocean to America when you see it, and it's like Wrigley's chewing gum and Coca-Cola and Elvis Presley and Cadillacs and New York City and the Empire State Building. Is that the romance of it was staggering. It was so important, you know.
Mike, I love a number of the things that you included in the film. I was especially moved, strangely moved, by the fan videos of fans singing John's songs. I thought that was great.
It's almost essential and fortunate that, you know, John still has all these fans who you mentioned, hey, can we use this? And they were so excited to share that stuff. Yeah. You know, John, you said something a few minutes ago. And in the film, I tried to incorporate the idea of putting things inside of a TV, because this is me from an outsider watching John's life as a latchkey kid, watching America through a lot of television. And you said something about black and white and color, and I would try to move things and add more color to it as it went along. It's just, we never talked about this. That's not, it's just a perception of going through this that he would use not only perceiving music, but also just kind of a way to deal with people. Very much that gunslinger sort of thing that you would use with other people. Like if we got into an argument, it's not like it was like you step outside and we're going to do it this way. We're going to do it this way. And I love the perception of that, and I added in, but I think it's really, thank you for sharing that, because that was something I saw that we never talked about.
You know, that's a really interesting thing, because, you know, Marty Robbins on the cover, I think it's Marty on the cover going for the gun. And there's this heroic lone figure, but there seems to be a point to everything. Like there was honor or rebels being outside the system, but really literally sticking to your guns. You know, I mean, it's like, if you didn't, you just go under a hail of fists. You know, I mean, there wasn't really a fork in the road you could take that was easy. Everything was like swimming against the tide. And you have that nature in the end of just putting your head down and going. And some of the stuff that would stop the average guy, you know, you get up off the floor and you think, well, what am I going to do? This is what I do. I'm just going to keep going. I mean, it's not honestly heroic, or it's just in my nature. I think when you see something that you think is the light, you move towards it. It's like a plant, you know. And that's the nature of making art. You'll climb over a barbed wire fence to get to the next level.
Missing You, which became such a global phenomenon. I was impressed to learn that came to you pretty quickly. What, about 10 minutes or so to write this song? And is it surprising to you that a song about denial became so popular with people?
Well, that was in my nature. I always try and make something with a twist on it. You know, anybody can write songs like Baby Likes to Rock. And, you know, if Elvis is singing it, it's going to have some kind of weight behind it. But I thought, I didn't know I was going to sing those lyrics. I just made it all up. And at the end, when I sang I Can Lie to Myself, Steve Marriott had a song called I'm Only Dreaming that was the flip side of Ichiku Park, I think. See you walking down the street, turn your head and walk away. Beautiful song. And at the end he says, I can lie to myself. And I didn't intend to steal his line. We got to the end of the song and I'm just riffing on the melody. And I just sang, I can lie to myself. It wasn't intentional. But obviously, the whole point of the song was distance. And trying to get through, it was denial, royal denial. It was like, really, you haven't got an option. You have to get through. You have to just straighten up and fly right. And it's a tough thing for a guy. But I can lie to myself. The whole song was magical. You know, I said before, I can hardly take credit for it. You know, this guy, Chess Sanford, had the backing track. And we'd been working on some stuff, and it just came along. And within 15 minutes, my life turned upside down.
The film is so great, and ultimately, it's about the making of art. And I feel like nothing captured that any better, Mike, than the reaction that you got from John when, John, you were talking about collaborating with Alison Krauss, and that was such a powerful, poignant moment in the film.
Well, like what I was going to say before, or what I'm saying now, is that if I'd have had some input on the edit, or I could see it and allow things and not allow things, it wouldn't have been the movie it's turned out to be. And that's kind of an embarrassing thing, to be emotional on a camera. You have nowhere to go. I couldn't even get out of the seat because I was hemmed in by the lights. But it was an emotional thing that came out of nowhere. And Alison has always been like an incredible artist and human being. And a lot of things, you know, a lot of it, a lot of the movie is just the truth. And I can't, you know, like Mike would know more about this than me being a filmmaker, but in my head, instinctually, I know that if you just tell people what's going on, the truth, they're going to look up from their cornflakes and go like, oh, great. And if it's like somebody on camera with a face full of makeup saying all the right things and talking about their new upcoming release, it's going to be drab every day. And I didn't want to be part of any of that. My music isn't about that. And what I do outside of music, I want to be that truthful.
Well, it's a wonderful film. I appreciate you both making time for us. And I want to add too, John, you mentioned in the film, Temple Bar, some of your best work. I couldn't agree more. I love it. Price of My Tears, one of my all-time favorite songs.
That means a lot to me because I sometimes get that. People walk up and go like, man, Temple Bar. And case in point, you know, I mean, that was probably my best work. And 2 months into the release with a giant single and a video made by Tony Scott and the New York's best musicians and me at top of my game, the record company folded. And what do you do? You know, what do you do? I mean, I made it. It's out there now. I bought it back. I own it. I'm proud of it. But you can't live your life thinking that you're going to always get lucky or be number one. I mean, you're going to keep going no matter what. I'm just so proud of Temple Bar, but that means a lot to me. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, thank you both for being with us. John, Mike, it's a wonderful film. John Waite, The Hard Way. We wish you both continued success.
God bless you.